Yeah, so I'm excited about that too. A good chunk of it in Trinity County. And, you know, Trinity has just been so hammered by major wildfires the whole time I've been in Congress, all 12 years. We've had several come through. The conditions are, going to be worrisome here in the months ahead. So the more proactive treatment we can do, the better. And Trinity also has something going for it. It has a forest collaborative with lots of stakeholders that have been looking very thoughtfully at strategies and projects that would really bring resilience in forest health and help start to turn the corner on this terrible fire reality that they've been living through. I don't want that to be the new normal where, you know, entire school districts have to cancel class because they can't breathe the air, where people are evacuated constantly and just live in fear of being wiped out. So this is an attempt to get ahead of it. It's a good investment in that direction. I'm excited about it.
Cannabis remains a significant topic for your constituents within the Emerald Triangle, and I was hoping you could briefly share your thoughts on reclassifying marijuana under federal law and whether this might pave the way for legalization.
Well, my view is it's about time. I think we have been kind of stuck in the 19th century for way too long on cannabis. And yet, even as we've begun to, decriminalize at the state level and make progress, there's these disconnects with federal law. That the schedule, the Controlled Substances Act schedule, is probably the biggest one. And it shouldn't have taken all this time to reschedule cannabis and stop treating it like, you know, heroin and the worst possible substances. But we're finally there, and it's starting to happen. And now we can go to work on other disconnects where lawful California cannabis businesses can't, you know, do banking and use the postal service. You know, once we get rescheduling, we can clean up all of those other things and start lifting up this legal industry in a way that pushes out the black market and all of the cash and the money laundering and the crime and things that I think good operators in this space want to be done with.
Last time we spoke, the jury had just begun their deliberations in Donald Trump's criminal trial, and since then, he has been convicted on all 34 counts. What implications does this have for our country and the presidential election?
Yeah, I don't know how it affects the election, Lauren. There's a lot of speculation about that, and all I know is I feel like it validates the rule of law. The idea that he would have somehow got away with something that's so obviously illegal. When this whole hush money scandal first came to light back in 2018, I wrote a letter to the Department of Justice urging them to open a criminal investigation because the facts were just so obvious. This guy was circumventing federal campaign laws. And, the wheels of justice turn slowly, but they turn. And the fact that we're here with this overwhelming conviction from a jury that took its work very seriously, a very respected jurist, and a process that worked, restores some of my faith, I think, in that the rule of law is still with us, still working.
And that is absolutely still unfolding, and we'll continue to track that. But I want to move to our southern border, where President Biden issued an executive order restricting asylum. This was considered one of the most restrictive immigration policies ever declared by a recent Democratic administration, and some national outlets are likening it to Donald Trump's 2017 policy, which Biden promised to revoke. And so I'm wondering for your perspective on this issue.
Well, you know, when I hear those characterizations, it's a great example of how, you know, there's sort of the echo chamber of how things get spun and characterized. And I guess headline writers kind of live in this space. And then there's the reality. And if you take the time to actually read the details and to ask people that work in this space, what does it mean? What's different? It is remarkably little. And what this basically amounts to is that people who show up at the border and simply shout the words, "I have a credible fear," are going to be treated just the way they were before this executive order. It's called, the shout test. But they have to sort of announce their credible fear proactively. And if they can do that, it's going to be very little change. If they don't do that, yeah, you're right. They will not be processed in the same way. But it's not the Remain in Mexico policy that Trump had. It's not family separation. It's not any of these draconian things. And I just have to marvel at some of the ways it's being characterized.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was wondering if you have an opinion on Mexico's newly elected president, Claudia Sheinbaum, who is an environmental scientist and actually completed her PhD at Berkeley.
I know. Isn't that awesome? Look, I'm trying not to get too excited about it because I love the fact that Mexico elected a woman. I love the fact that she's a climate scientist. And she's a Jewish woman, I believe. So there's just all kinds of things I like about it. She seems to favor renewables and a transition from their state-owned fossil fuel enterprises into clean energy companies. So, you know, what's not to like about all of that? My hope also is that she will, I think she ran against corruption and cartels, and that's the other big problem with Mexico these days. It's kind of a narco state. The cartels have just had so much influence, and it spills out into this immigration issue you and I were talking about with the southern border. So I hope it's a reset. I hope she has the power and the fortitude to do a reset. And, you know, I hope President Biden reaches out and sees this as an opportunity for a reset, because if we had a partner in Mexico with the authority and, you know, the public imprimatur and political capital to really make major changes, we could solve so many problems together, from climate to immigration to the quality of life in Central and the Mexican part of North America. It's an important moment.
And finally, on Friday, President Biden announced a, quote, roadmap to an enduring ceasefire that consisted of three different phases. Do you think this will be an effective roadmap to push both Netanyahu and Hamas towards a deal?
I'm sure hoping it is, Lauren. I feel like it's the best hope we've got at this point. I love the fact that President Biden really put the full weight of his office behind it, endorsing it, committing to put pressure on all parties to get to yes around this framework. And the fact that at least some parts of the Israeli government seem to say that it could work. You know, I see the cracks, the conservative side of Netanyahu's government, you know, calling it surrender, saying they won't support it. Others saying that they need it and they do support it. So I'm just crossing my fingers. You know, hope is not a plan, as they say. So I'm sure that if this fails and if the conflict continues to unfold, I'll have really tough decisions to make, and we'll have to think about what comes next. But right now, I'm just very much supporting what President Biden is trying to do with that ceasefire plan and hoping we get to yes.
Anything else you'd like to leave us with today?
That's a lot. You know what? I will leave you with one thing. I want to compliment you, because I do a lot of interviews, and rarely do I run into someone who has thought out as much as you always do really important, timely questions about issues of the day. It makes it a lot of fun to have these conversations, and I appreciate you.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Congressman Huffman. Take good care.
Yeah, you too.
Bye.